official. The skeleton remains at the Florida Nature Park have been identified by the FBI as Brian Laundrie's. The manhunt is over, but what about the investigation? Is there someone left to pay the price for the violent death of Gabby Petito? That's ahead on Banfield. It is official. The dental records say so. The skeletal remains found at the Florida Reserve have been identified by the FBI as Brian Laundrie's. The manhunt for the central figure in the saga of Gabby Petito's homicide is over. Brian's parents, Chris and Roberta Laundrie, got a brief visit from the Northport police earlier today. Their lawyer says they were informed the bones in the swamp indeed belonged to Brian. And when I say brief, I mean that visit was quick. So the only person of interest in the death of Gabby Petito is dead. But make no mistake, the investigation is not. Gabby's death still needs to be solved. And the case needs to officially be closed. And it is not. We still don't know how Brian Laundrie died or what is in that mysterious notebook of his. Could that notebook hold the secrets that everyone is waiting to hear? Like who killed Gabby? And why on earth did a young woman like that have to die? Is that in the notebook? Joining me now, the man who has been there from day one, News Nation correspondent Brian Enten. Brian, you were there when the police showed up at Chris and Roberta Laundrie's home behind you. Actually, I think you're at the reserve tonight. I can't tell. It's dark behind you. I think you're at the reserve. What characterize that visit?
So we are at the reserve tonight, but we had cameras at the house, so we know exactly what happened. And basically, two Northport police officers showed up. Christopher Laundrie opened the door. The two Northport officers went inside the house. They were in the house for just about 2 minutes. Not long at all. 2 minutes inside the house. They were in, and then they were out. We had the camera up. I found out immediately that this was going on. We had talked about this, Ashley, that we suspected that when this moment came, there would be officers at the house doing a death notification. Immediately got in touch with Mr. Bertolino, the attorney for the Laundrie's, and he confirmed that they were there announcing that the remains here at the reserve were, in fact, Brian Laundrie's.
And, you know, as has been the norm, there are protesters. There are obviously throngs of media at their house. Did anyone get a look at them as they opened that door? And were there any protesters? And I think I even saw some new, quite disparaging signs on their lawn.
There are more signs. We did not get a good look at their face because we saw Chris open the door very, very quickly. But we didn't get a good look at either of them because the detectives went in so quickly and then left.
All right, let's turn our attention to what was found behind you. Not far, as it turns out, behind you, just off the trailhead, about a half hour, maybe 45 minutes, depending on who you talk to. They discovered the Laundrie's, as their lawyer has said, they discovered the dry bag that belonged to their son. Police apparently discovered the backpack and the remains, not that far away, but the Laundrie's discovered the dry bag. And we are told by reports now that the notebook was outside of the dry bag. Devastating news, because a notebook needs to stay dry if you want to read it. But what do we know about the notebook?
So we know, according to reports, that they are drying out the notebook now and that they may be able to make out what is inside the notebook. But at this point, it is still too soon to tell. You mentioned the dry bag. That was on one side of the trail where, according to the attorney, Christopher Laundrie was on that side. He's the one who found the bag. It was on the other side of the trail, several hundred feet away, where the police, the two officers who were with the Laundrie's in the reserve, discovered the book bag, and then the human remains were near that book bag.
And apparently they're saying something along the lines of they're not even going to try to open this notebook until it's completely dried out, obviously for fear that they might disturb any kind of, you know, salvageable information that may be contained inside. So I hope they really do pay attention to that process. All right, now to the elephant. the elephant on every TV screen, the elephant at the reserve where you are, the elephant in front of the laundry's house. I don't feel like we got any explanation, any answers from what we thought would be an informative news conference this morning regarding how on earth 38 days of searching could yield nothing, but 30 minutes of a nice light walk on the trail could discover, you know, the beginning of the end of all of this by the laundries.
So it's interesting because when you talk to Mr. Bertolino about this very question, he almost makes it seem like anyone who would question how the laundries so quickly discovered the personal items of Brian's after a five-week FBI investigation, but then they show up and find them. He makes it seem like you're basically crazy to be asking that question. But yes, it is sort of like the elephant in the room. Everyone's asking it. We did get a little bit of clarity today from Northport Police because there's been sort of this theory going around, people concerned. Is it possible that the laundries came and planted those items? Northport Police say absolutely not. They issued a very, very strongly worded statement to us after we inquired about this. They said they are 100% sure, and that was what they said, 100% sure that Chris and Roberta did not show up here with any of those items. They say they had eyes on Chris and Roberta, and they did not show up with the book bag or the notebook.
Okay, well, it's one thing to say that they didn't, you know, carry something in there. But it is another thing, Brian, to have knowledge of where things might be. And that may be the thing that Mr. Bertolino is not addressing when he gets angry that the public dares to be dumb enough. And I consider myself a member of the public, and I take great umbrage with that notion that we're all just stupid. There's nothing to see here. For heaven's sake, let's just let it go. And I'm sorry, but the way this unfolded yesterday, it did not square. And he did Marnie did a valiant job in her interview with Mr. Bertolino, but I didn't get any clarity, and I instead was offended by the notion that what's wrong? What's wrong with parents showing up and doing what hundreds of officers and dogs and drones and swamp buggies and helicopters and, you know, everything else were not able to do in 38 days? I'm sorry, but I feel like the members of the press who were there today might have been a bit ticked off themselves with the big congratulatory free-for-all where the police were so thrilled with their work.
Well, look, we still need clarity. We have questions. Yes, Brian Laundrie is now dead, and that does close one chapter of the story. But there are still things that just don't make sense. And Mr. Bertolino seems to get angry when you bring that up, and he makes it seem like he just can't understand. But you're right. I mean, it's not just a couple of people that have these questions. There are still so many things that need to be figured out, including how the parents were able to discover those items so quickly today after the five-week FBI search. If you talk to Mr. Bertolino, he'll quickly explain that part of the reserve was underwater, very, very high water, he says, in that part. And to him, it just makes sense that the last time the FBI searched this area, all that stuff was underwater. Now it was exposed, and they were able to find it today or yesterday.
Well, you know, gosh, today I heard him say it's just off the trailhead. It's just off the entrance to the park. So if the dogs and the swamp buggies and the search personnel are entering the park, they all go through that every day that they search the park. And so I am still offended by the notion that I'm the idiot or that the public is the idiot for thinking there's nothing amiss here. There's nothing to chew on that just doesn't sit right. I just smell a rat in the whole notion that 20 feet off an often walked trail, shazam, you know, here's where it all was. All of you have been, you know, lost for a long time. Brian, hold your thought for a moment. I want to bring in someone else who's a friend of the show, Joseph Scott Morgan. He is a certified death investigator, which is really what we need right about now. He's also a distinguished scholar of applied forensics at Jacksonville State University. He's the host of the podcast Body Bags. So, Joe, you heard the news today as well. And there's lots for someone like you to make sense of. We know that these are skeletal remains. We know that they've been there a long time. We know that there were clothes apparently beside the remains, and reports say the same clothes that Brian Laundry was wearing when he left on that hike. And then we hear it's dental records. I'm sure that's all normal to you, but take us a little further into your science and help us with, you know, understand what's going on right now.
First off, the most shocking thing for me, Ash, is the fact that they got this body identified so quickly with dental records. It's almost like they were prepared with them prior to. Generally, it takes some time to first acquire the dental records. You realize how quick this was? They were able to actually do the dental exam and get this body identified that quickly. They had these in their back pocket. They were waiting on this. Now, I don't know if they suspected that he was down or not, but that, for me, was particularly striking.
So here's the question. A lot of people say, well, we now want to know how he died, Joe. We want to know if it'll be really hard to determine how Brian Laundry died. Did he kill himself? Did he shoot himself? Did he hang himself? Did he overdose? Did he die of elements? And it sounds to me like there's not a whole lot of tissue, which is really critical in your line of work. Can we find out how he died?
Yeah, let's back up a little bit. You had mentioned skeletal remains. They're actually saying partial skeletal remains. And I've even heard one report that the skull might be compromised in some way, that there might be some elements of the skull missing. So what do we do? Well, you don't have any soft tissue. They've already stated that the body is skeletonized. And so it's going to be a very difficult task in order to identify something unless there is specific trauma to an area like the skull that would give us an indication that this could be gunfire in some way, or that he had been struck in the head with a depressed skull fracture, something of that nature. You're not going to be able to determine, for instance, if this was a strangulation. If what they're saying is true relative to absence of tissue, which generally is what skeletonized means. So you can't appreciate hemorrhage, that sort of thing, in the neck area. You go down this road and you begin to think about, well, did he hang himself? Okay, well, was there a rope adjacent? Did he shoot himself? Well, was there a weapon found there? And finally, people are asking, is this an OD? Well, circumstantial evidence we would look for is an open pill bottle or signs of illicit drug use.
So, Joe, they didn't say anything about a gun. First thing I thought when a lot of people said, well, maybe he went in there and shot himself. Well, if you shoot yourself and you die, typically the gun isn't far away. It's not like you can spend a whole bunch of time afterwards after that gunshot and, put it somewhere. So that so far is not information that we have. But regarding that information, when we were trying to get information with regard to Gabby Petito's autopsy, the coroner in Wyoming said, I've been asked to keep that quiet for a few weeks. And I'm wondering if the same kind of thing could be going on here.
No, I don't think it's a matter of them being asked to keep it quiet. I think that this is such a detailed investigation. Ash, there's so many elements from a forensic standpoint and from an anatomical standpoint that still have to be assessed. You've got a body, they're saying partial skeleton, remember that. So that implies to me that you have potentially scattered remains, which means they don't have a complete skeleton. Don't be surprised in the coming days if perhaps you see cadaver dogs coming back out there, members of the ME's office coming back out there, because what they would be looking for instance, are small particulate pieces of bone that maybe have been drug away by scavengers at this point in time. That's the key. You need all of the information that you can. You have to have it coalesce in order to make a final determination from a scientific standpoint. You can't go off half-cocked on this, so it's going to take some time. But I don't think it's withholding information. That we're in an analysis phase right now.
Yeah. Well, I will say the ME was back out there today, and I thought the same thing that you just mentioned, Joe. But probably back out there looking for additional pieces. And that is, again, in your business, this is normal. If a body's out there, the animals can do lots to it and take it in a lot of different ways. Joseph Scott Morgan, thank you so much for your expertise. Hope you'll come back again, certainly, as we find out more about the remains and try to decipher it. Thank you. I'm going to ask Brian Enten to stick around because Brian was at the press conference today. Oh, man, press conference is super generous. It was really more of a pageant, a symphony of self-congratulation, backpatting among law enforcement. And I want to know how the press felt about it, because I heard you all on Twitter and you seem to be really ticked off. Take a look.
Again, our thoughts and prayers are with the family members, and It's tragedy. Thank you.
Well, why do you think Brian Laundrie's family found these items in a day?
Do you think if the Laundries would have cooperated sooner, that you would have found him sooner?
Was this a press conference to just say thank you? Chief, is there any new information? Was there any point of the press conference? What was the point of that?
What was the point of that? What was the point of that? That's next. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Brian Laundrie investigation. The FBI confirming today that those skeletal remains found in the Florida Reserve are, in fact, Brian Laundrie's. The dental records say so. But even before that match was made, the police were taking what could only be described as a victory lap. Remember that they'd been searching for 38 days, right? With all the high fancy tech gear, with the tax money, you know, that we all spent on that big old search. But it wasn't them. It was Christopher Laundrie out for a Wednesday stroll who happened upon Brian Laundrie's dry bag in about 30 minutes flat. So I want to play for you with that as your backdrop. Some of the so-called press conference that was held at the Reserve this morning, but I'm going to warn you, pour a stiff drink, hold on to your hat, because this symphony of self-congratulation let reporters, it left them just to shout, and it left viewers stunned.
I couldn't be more proud of Chief Todd Garrison, Sarasota Sheriff Kurt Hoffman, the FBI, and all law enforcement agencies that are here today. This is my first time being here. We have deployed, Chief Garrison and I have been in constant contact since the beginning of the incident. We deployed assets immediately, resources, deputies, our FARO system, which can analyze a crime scene and save hours and hours of man hours, our drones, the Dragonfish. Dragonfish has the capability of flying 67 miles an hour and 18.6 miles away from the operator, with the FLIR and all the capabilities of a helicopter. Today when I walked back there, I got to see firsthand the treacherous conditions that they were working on. We're talking about water levels up above almost the chest area, rattlesnakes, moccasins, alligators. And these heroes go out there. While we can't change the outcome, we can bring justice. And today I'm very, very proud to say that Chief Garrison and our team of law enforcement, which is regional, it doesn't matter what color patch or uniform you wear, we work as one team and one family. And the law enforcement community came together, and I'm very proud to be a part of that. Chief Garrison, like to say a few words?
Well, thank you, Sheriff. It means a lot. As we said yesterday, not one agency can handle all of this, and it's important that we rely on our partners. And Sheriff Carmine Marcino and Sheriff Kurt Hoffman have been huge players in helping this investigation throughout, also with the FBI. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. You know, it's challenging times. I know everybody wants to know exactly what's going on every second possible. All of America is watching, okay? But we'll never jeopardize an investigation to give that information out until the time is right. But again, I want to reiterate, this is a difficult business we're in law enforcement. Things change by the second, by the minute. These are very, very difficult conditions. I mean, you're searching in areas that you just can't walk up and look. It's not like you're searching a house or a car. These areas are huge, and they're covered by water. So I couldn't be more proud of the team. Once again, I mean, Sheriff Hoffman from Sarasota, we're all one family. Sheriff's done a great job. Chief Garrison and our FBI, second to none, they came together from all over. We're talking about, you know, different states of communication here. And the end result is one team, one family working to bring closure. Again, our thoughts and prayers are with the family members, and it's tragedy. Thank you.
Why do you think Brian Laundrie's family found these items in a day?
Do you think if the Laundries would have cooperated sooner, that you would have found him sooner?
Was this a press conference?
So that was Brian Enten at the end there. Was this a press conference? I believe that was Brian Enten at the end. I'm sorry, I really didn't want to cut that last part off there because those questions from the reporters were the most important part of that press conference. The questions from the reporters were the most important part of the press conference because they weren't answered. And I know you are out there and you feel the same way I do. You are mad as hell at this mess, at this circus, at this coincidence. 38 days of searching, but the laundries, 30 minutes. They were so effusive with each other. I mean, very, very proud, second to none. Proud, proud, proud. Heroes, huge, huge players. Challenging times, but thank you. Great job. I didn't even get a full list. This, honest to God, in my career brought me back about 16 years. 16 years. Another epic congratulations fail. When thousands of people were dying during Hurricane Katrina, the president decided to backslap the guy in charge. This is what it looked like.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Oh, yeah. Just 10,000 people were dying, but Brownie, the problem is this stuff lives on tape. These things live on tape, and we're not dumb. We don't forget this. We see it. We watch these things. We're not idiots, and you can't gaslight us. News Nation's Brian Enten still with us. I am angry, and I wasn't even there. But, Brian, I could only imagine that the reporters who have been waiting to clear up the insanity that has become this search in the reserve probably felt a little more angry than I did.
Yeah, this was really, really strange. And let me kind of tell you the backstory here. So the first guy you saw talking is the Lee County Sheriff. That is Fort Myers. That is not the county where this is happening. He has literally nothing to do with the investigation into Brian Laundrie or Gabby Petito. Yes, that county lent some resources here, the drone and some other things, just like other counties sent canine dogs. There's a lot of people and agencies that sent stuff here to help out. But he has nothing to do with this investigation. Zero. So he shows up with sort of like an entourage, and we're out here, and we weren't really sure. I'm like, who, you know, I'm not from here, so I'm like, who is that guy? Oh, he's from Fort Myers. Well, why would he be here? I asked Luis and the other reporters, you know, why is he here? What would he be possibly saying? So he says, I'm going in, and I'm going to be doing a press conference when I come out. So I'm like, okay, there's not going to be much coming from this because he has nothing to do with the investigation. So we kind of stand down. I say, let's just see what happens. He comes back out, but he comes with the Northport police chief. So now I'm much more interested. Northport police chief is also now involved. They have that press conference. You just played it. And yes, it was frustrating because we weren't able to get any of our questions answered. Not so much from this Lee County Sheriff, because what was he going to say? He has nothing to do with anything. But the Northport police chief was there with him for this sort of odd moment. Right. That's what I wonder. What's going on behind the scenes? Why is this happening? Where's the FBI? Why are they even having this press conference? It was so strange.
Yeah. So the FBI wasn't there. And I think that screams volumes about how the FBI felt about all this. Just before we go, Brian, you are not the only one frustrated. I'm not the only one frustrated. The over 120,000 people who were watching your live stream were frustrated. Here's a couple of the comments they were giving you in real time as they watched this dog and pony show on the screen. Jesus Saves tweeted, seriously, what was this? A press conference for officers to tell other officers how proud they were? Do that in a department meeting. Lindsay tweeted, these cops have flubbed since the beginning, and now they're celebrating the fact that the parents did their job for them. Shannon tweeted, what an anticlimactic nothing burger. Really? A press conference to thank themselves? Beth tweeted, oh my God, this was a joke. Maybe I'll have a press conference later on my front lawn to let the world know that I'm a great mom and super good at my job. And Serena tweeted, Brian Enten asking, Chief, was there any point to this press conference? Made my day. All of this sounds funny until this point. And I'm going to make this point, Brian. Brian Laundrie didn't have to be dead. Brian Laundrie didn't have to be the result of a 38-day search and 30-minute search. Brian Laundrie should have had eyes on when they said they had eyes on. So for this kind of thing to happen, this big old we did a great job, I can only think that right now the Laundries are grieving and are probably a little sickened by it.
And let me add one thing, Ashley, while we're still on this. I mean, the point he made about the officers, the rank and file officers working hard, we've seen video of them in waist-deep water. You've mentioned with the dogs out there with the alligators and snakes. I mean, obviously, the officers are doing heroic work trying to search. But the press conference from the sheriff, who's not even from this county, who has nothing to do with the investigation, none of that really made any sense.
And they weren't answering questions. You can backslap if you want, but don't you dare ignore the elephant in the room when the public is asking questions through those reporters. Brian Enten, thank you. Don't go anywhere. We're going to answer a few questions from viewers in a little bit, and we do have a lot of questions as well. In the meantime, when we come back, when Chris Laundry found his son's things, well, you would think that the police were going to be right there on his tail, right? Like this Fox News cameraman was. He followed them in. He was watching them as they went into the, you know, bramble. But it turns out the police kind of let it slip this morning that they couldn't see him. And at certain points, couldn't see or hear him. And at certain points, were hundreds of feet away from him. So is that a heck of a job? Well, what law enforcement couldn't do in 6 weeks, the laundry couple right there did in about 30 minutes. I don't know, maybe 45, but even that little detail is another conflicting report on all of this. Yesterday on CNN, the Laundry's attorney, Steve Bertolino, said this.
No, Mr. Laundry informed me that it was quite near the entrance. He didn't put an exact distance on it. He put a time frame of about 30 minutes in. But I would guess it could be a mile or two into the preserve.
30 minutes in, mile or two into the preserve. But the Northport police instead said this, quote, I would say the location is a 45-minute hike north into the Carlton from the footbridge. The remains were found about 2 to 3 miles into the reserve. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, okay, it may not seem like much of a difference, but when you are hiking through heavy brush and chest-high water that the police said they battled during this search, 1 to 2 miles is not nothing. It's actually something. All right, so Brian is going to join us in a little bit, but there's something that's really been bothering me about this, and I want to read something from the Northport police if I can. And this one just stuck out to me because I've been watching every little bit of this, right? And we got this quote today from the Northport Police, and this is what it says. What I can say is that Northport Police Department, NPPD, met the family at the park yesterday. That's yesterday morning. We did not want them out there without our view. So we followed them around together at some times and within a few within a few hundred feet at others. We are 100% confident the family did not bring any items which were found yesterday with them. So this Fox News reporter sees the Laundries, walks in there with them. Do you see in any of these pictures that Fox News got any police? I'm just asking the viewers here. Do you see any police in any of this video from this digital reporter? Nah, nothing, nothing. And the police admit we followed them around together at some times and within a few hundred feet at other times. A few hundred feet in the woods is bad. A few hundred feet, well, that starts to explain what Mr. Bertolino said yesterday, the Laundry's lawyer. He said that his client, Mr. Laundry, seen there with Roberta, discovered the white bag in the bramble about 20 feet off of the path, just like you're seeing right there. And didn't want to touch it. So he looked for the police officers to let them know because he was worried about this guy with the camera. Didn't want to leave the bag there for the guy with the camera to do something. And what happened when Mr. Laundry tried to find the police officers that had apparently accompanied him in there so that he could point out the white bag? He couldn't find them. They were too far away. They weren't even within shouting distance, it turned out. So what did he do? He picked up the white bag, the dry bag. Now you tell me if that's a heck of a job. Now you tell me if they had eyes on the Laundries at all times. Yes, the Fox News guy, he's got eyes on the Laundries right now. But you don't have to bring the white bag in there for them to be something fishy. Maybe the knowledge of the white bag in there. Brian Enten is back with me now. So you see why it's unfair for anyone, police or Mr. Bertolino, to suggest that the public are the idiots here.
Yeah, I think it's totally fair that the public and the media have a lot of questions about this. That is why we reached out to Northport PD today to get some clarification, which you read there. I mean, they say that they had two officers within a couple of hundred feet of the laundries at all times, and that they basically had eyes on the laundries. But You clarified a couple of hundred feet. That's quite a ways in terms of trying to shout at someone. And in a reserve with trees and bushes and high grass, I mean, how do we know there was even visual contact throughout the entire thing?
Right.
We don't know.
And we know from Mr. Bertolino, the laundry's lawyer, that they tried to find the police to say we found something. And they couldn't find the police, so they picked the something up themselves and tainted that evidence. Real quickly, one other thing, Brian, and that is this very important moment, and it cannot be discounted, that on the 16th of September, that is one day before the laundries finally said, oh, yeah, our son's missing. We're going to fill out a report. And fully 4 days after he had gone on this walk, I want to play what the police chief said when he was asked, do you actually have eyes on, eyes on Brian Laundrie to that extent? And here was his answer.
Do you know where Brian Laundrie is right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently not, because Mr. Bertolino said, how on earth could they have known that when we, the family, had not known where he was for 4 days? Now I just don't know who to believe anymore. Brian Enten, our viewers have a lot of questions for you. So a little later on in the show, will you come back and answer them?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. It's one of my favorite parts where viewers get to ask specifics of one of the smartest guys on this story. First, I want a second opinion, and then I also want a third on the comments that the Laundrie family lawyer made tonight to my colleague Marnie when she interviewed him. I also want to know about that news conference. I'm still not over it. I use the term loosely, right? Huh. That's coming up next. Brian Laundrie manhunt is hardly the first investigation that could have ended better had authorities done some key things differently. And that is not an opinion. That is fact. But you wouldn't know it from this morning's news conference outside of the swamp where Laundrie's remains had been found less than 24 hours earlier. I want to talk more about that with Pat LaLama, an Emmy award-winning journalist and true crime analyst who has covered as many of the trials of the century as I have. And we are also joined by Mark O'Mara, criminal defense attorney and civil rights attorney, also based in Florida. All right, first, you guys, I want to replay a quick moment that my colleague Marnie Hughes did an interview with Stephen Bertolino, and a huge question came up. You talked to Brian Laundrie. What did he say? I just want to play that and ask you something on the other side. Take a look.
At any point in the last 5 weeks, have you spoken with Brian Laundrie?
Yes, I spoke to Brian Laundrie on September 12th and September 13th.
And what can you share about that conversation?
Not much. Any conversation I had with Brian Laundrie is privileged. I can tell you that, Chris and Roberta have been worried about Brian Laundrie since Brian went out for the hike on that Monday. And, from there, there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of accusations. A lot of news outfits have proliferated that misinformation.
Okay, Mark O'Mara, I heard something that really tweaked my interest, and that was I'm not going to tell you what I talked to Brian Laundrie about on the 12th and the 13th. That's privileged. But a lot of people are saying, but he's dead. Doesn't that mean you can? Does it?
It absolutely does not. Privilege does not die with the client passing. Privilege continues on. That attorney is bound by his ethical rules to maintain that privilege forever, unless and until somehow it's waived, and now that Brian has passed, it cannot be.
Okay, so here's another question. There are three people in that laundry house for quite some time. That's Chris, that's Roberta, and that's Brian. I have always understood that if you're in a conversation with your lawyer, sure, that's privileged. But if you bring someone else into it, it is not privileged. And this is key because there's lots of stuff those laundries know or knew that we'd all like to know. So is that privilege broken? Does it exist? Or do the laundries have to talk at some point?
If you bring in a third party to a confidential communication between attorney and client, there is no privilege. Now, remember, if it's the three of us on this screen saying, let's go buy this house, and the lawyer is advising the three of us on that common goal, then that privilege exists. It's when I'm talking about a specific event, let's talk about a crime, and I bring in my mom or my dad or my sister or my best friend or the person who's paying the fee. It waives the privilege completely. Not only can the witnesses to that non-privileged communication be required to testify, the lawyer at that point can be required to testify because there is no privilege.
Well, that's intriguing. Pat LaLama, I want to bring you in on that. I saw you were, you know, you look like you were getting angry with that information. Did that tweak you in a way?
No. I agree with what your attorney was saying completely. I'm just thinking overall about how we're feeling about all of this. I think we're giving this attorney maybe a little bit too much credibility. I'm going to take off the journalism cap and give you just the 44 years of experience cap. I think this attorney is a gaslighter. Have you ever known anybody who, when you try to bring up something that's very, very legit, yells and screams at you and tells you you're an idiot? That's gaslighting. He's starting to have a little bit of a Michael Avenatti feel to him, to me. And so I'm not taking anything he says with any kind of credibility. So that's my frustration, not with the person that was just speaking.
Yeah. So the news conference, look, you know, Mark, you're a lawyer, but that news conference made my blood boil because the suggestions are is that there's nothing to see here. And that's just not true.
No, that was absurd. There are people, let's not forget, it is tough to look at a camera and make sense. It really is. Lawyers are supposed to know how to make sense at all times, but it is a little bit more difficult. But what was really frustrating, particularly with the officers, were this is an opportunity. Look, the media is the public. It is the bridge to the public. And you have an obligation to inform the public through the media. This was just, it made no sense because there are so many unanswered questions. And now that the investigation is sort of over, because it is with laundry, there is no investigation to maintain secrecy or protection of. So give us some answers. Give us the answers you know. Let some people be able to rest, not particularly the Petito family.
Pat, 15 seconds left. Take it away. I can see it's got you going.
Now I am frustrated. There's nothing they could say. I guarantee you the FBI told them to shut up, don't answer any questions. Yes, they were over the top in the congratulatory business, but they don't know anything yet. This investigation is not over. We still need cause of death. There are still all kinds of questions that need to be answered, and we need to quit speculating until we know the facts.
I couldn't agree with both of you more, and I adore you both, too. Mark O'Meara, Pat LaLama, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Coming up after the break, Brian Enten is back to answer your questions, and I know you have a lot because they watched you on the live stream today, and you were fired up, folks. We're going through them now, but you can tweet me at Ashley Banfield. You can also tweet at Brian Enten. Back right after this. All right. I promised you that we'd come back with Brian Enten, and I am sorry. We have breaking news to bring to you, and it is really horrendous news. Alec Baldwin has been in a movie. He's been performing in a movie, and apparently he was using a prop gun, and this has just happened. Apparently the prop gun actually fired, and two people on his set, one is dead, and another is injured. I'm getting it as quickly as I can for you, but let me just tell you what I can tell you right now. This comes from The Hollywood Reporter. A crew member killed a prop firearm on the Western movie set called Rust. This is according to the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department through The Hollywood Reporter. The director of photography, a 42-year-old woman named Halnya Hutchins, injured when the prop gun was fired. You know, obviously Baldwin is the film's star, but he's also the producer. Halnya, or Helena, I think it is, Helena Hutchins, was transported by helicopter to the University of New Mexico Hospital, but she didn't survive. This was a prop gun, and she didn't survive this incident. The second victim is the director of the movie, Joel Souza, 48 years old. He apparently, after this incident, was taken by ambulance to another medical center called Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center. All we can say about him right now is that he's in critical condition. A spokesperson for the sheriff's office named Juan Rios told these details to The Hollywood Reporter, and I'm looking for anything else I can find here. Apparently, this I can tell you this quote. According to investigators, it appears that the scene being filmed involved the use of a prop firearm when it discharged, the sheriff's department said. Detectives are investigating how and what type of projectile was actually discharged. Again, all of this coming from The Hollywood Reporter right now. Sheriff's deputies were dispatched to what was called the Bonanza Creek Ranch set. This is not far from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Interestingly enough, let's see, it was 1:50 Mountain Time, so about 4 o'clock or so Eastern Time. A 911 call had come in, and the 911 call suggested there was an individual who had been shot. That's the information that The Hollywood Reporter got. A spokesperson from the production, again, the film Rust, starring and produced by Alec Baldwin, said this. The accident, in quotes, involved the misfire of a prop gun with blanks. Production has been halted for the time being. The safety of our cast and crew remains our top priority. There's a couple of other people starring in this film. Francis Fisher, Jensen Ackles, Travis Fimmel. This is a film about an infamous Western outlaw, Harland Rust. What's really phenomenal here is that it bears a remarkable resemblance. Here's the film set that we're able to show you. But it wasn't, it's in recent history that Brandon Lee, Bruce Lee's son, was killed on the film set of The Crow in almost the exact same way. When a blank got caught in a chamber, the second blank pushed him through like a bullet, and that's how Brandon Lee was killed on a film set. So again, breaking news, Alec Baldwin apparently firing a prop gun that killed the director of photography and injured the director of this film. Russ, we're going to continue to follow this on News Nation, and I'm sorry to give it to you in such a disjointed way, but we'll continue to watch. And thanks so much for being with us tonight on Banfield.